Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator. Thanks for downloading Art for Your Ear, an artsy podcast filled with behind-the-scenes stories from amazing artists before they're in the art history books. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. And they want to give you 10% off all art at SaatchiArt.com. Just use Jealous Curator at checkout. Okay, today I'm talking to my friend, artist-illustrator Lisa Congdon. I'm sure lots of you have heard Lisa be interviewed before. She's very popular. So I tried to ask a few questions that she's never been asked. It was tricky, but I think I may have done it. Okay, here we go. Let's talk to Lisa from her new home in Portland. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Danielle.
I'm so happy to talk to you.
And what your listeners may not know is that it's 9 o'clock at night that we're doing this.
I know.
That's what happens when you're a busy lady.
I know, and they don't even know. You should see my recording studio.
Yes.
Did you see it on Instagram by any chance?
No.
Oh, it's quite something. I'm currently in a makeshift pillow fort draped in a sheet. I put my easel behind me. I drape a fitted sheet over. I've got pillows on either side. It is freaking hot in here. It's like 100 degrees outside, and I'm in a podcast pod.
That sounds awful.
It is, but totally worth it.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like I'm recording in a cave anymore, so that's good. Yeah. Okay, I have so many questions for you. Here's the thing. Okay. You've been interviewed so many times by so many people. And actually, this morning, I listened to your you and Clay talking to Kathleen and Emily on Being Boss.
Yes.
It was so good.
Well, thank you. It was fun doing a podcast with Clay.
Yeah, it was really cool to hear you guys talk together. But I was sort of like, do I listen to this or... because I didn't want to ask the same questions that they asked, but then you were saying such good stuff, and I was like, damn, I wish I'd asked that question. So I listened to like 3/4 of it, and I stopped. I was like, I'm just going to ask her my own stuff. So I'm going to start with a weird speed round.
Okay.
And just ask you a bunch of weird random questions.
Okay.
And then I have more questions, and then we'll just go on tangents.
Okay. I'm really terrible at speed rounds, but hopefully I can...
There's a timer and an entire point system, so you better not mess this up.
Okay.
Just to be clear. Okay, ready?
Yep.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee. Although, what? I love tea.
Okay, we'll put both of those down. 20 points each. What is the wallpaper on your phone right now?
It is an Ellsworth Kelly painting.
Oh, nice. I was wondering if it was going to be one of yours.
No, I have my iPhone case is my own, but the wallpaper is this very simple Ellsworth Kelly piece that I love. And so there you go.
Okay. Favorite artist?
A favorite artist?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Dead or alive?
Geez. This is the speed round questions that really screw me up. The ones where there's like 20 different possibilities and I have to think about it just to make sure I'm saying the one that's like the most significant. Coffee, tea, those kinds of questions I can answer.
Yeah. Well, you'll like the next one then.
Oh, geez. Why am I not in my living room where all my books are so that I can like cheat and look at all my favorite book, my favorite artist books.
We'll come back.
Okay, sorry. Favorite, I'm terrible. I told you.
That's okay. You warned me. Favorite dessert?
Oh, that's easy. Ice cream.
Oh, okay. Will you get more tattoos?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's the end of the speed round. I want to ask you about your tattoos because you have a big giant California up your arm.
Yes.
And you've just moved to Portland.
I know.
Are you going to get like Portland or Oregon?
Maybe someday. So I moved to California when I was 8 years old in 1976. And I pretty much have lived until 3 months ago lived in California, specifically in the Bay Area, with the exception of like one summer in college when I interned in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. And I love California. And I got the tattoo when I turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of celebrate my 40th birthday, but then also honor this place that I have a very strong relationship to. I love the landscape there mostly, and you know, there are all kinds of things about California in general that I love. It's like my home. It'll always be part of me. But California didn't feel like a realistic place for me to live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting really expensive, especially in the Bay Area, where I basically have lived my entire life from the time I was 8 years old. But it just was a place that I actually chose not to live anymore because, mm-hmm. Because not just because it's expensive, but because the city of San Francisco itself is changing, the Bay Area is changing. It's a very sort of wealthy place now, and it's, you know, because of the tech industry mm-hmm. in particular, harder and harder to find affordable housing. And my wife and I wanted to own a house, and I also wanted to be closer to my family. And most of my family, my brother still lives in San Francisco. He still lives in the Bay Area, but the rest of my family had migrated to Portland, and I sort of fell in love with it here. So as much as I love California, it didn't feel like a realistic place for me to live anymore, especially if I wanted to bring my wife on to help me run my business and live off just my income. We needed to go somewhere where the cost of living was a little lower.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just love it here. My family's here. I'm like in a love affair with Oregon right now and with Portland. Much as I love California, I'm like, I probably will end up getting a Portland or an Oregon tattoo at some point.
It'll just maybe be a tiny bit smaller just so that there's hierarchy.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We did the exact same thing. We were in Vancouver and it was just so, so expensive. And for us to have a house and for my son to have a backyard, we moved.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you still love Vancouver and all it has to offer, but
yeah, it was just a lifestyle choice and it was a good one. And I think what you guys are doing is so exciting too. Now, I know you guys talked about that on Being Boss. So everybody go and listen to Being Boss because it's such a great podcast and it was such a great episode. So I'm going to let that be over there. I want to ask you, so I have a feeling that all of my readers probably know your origin story because it's such a good one and you know, people have heard it. But can you just give the Coles note? Oh, that's Canadian. Coles Notes, I think that's Canadian. Can you give the abbreviated form of that story about the fact that you had a completely other career for a really long time and then now you're a full-time artist?
Yeah, I'll give you the condensed version. So when I was 32, I might have been 31, I can't exactly remember because this was before the internet. And so
you can't go back through your Instagram feed and check.
Today, it's like you can actually track when you did everything in your life because of the internet. This was not the case then. So in around 2001, there was an internet. I just wasn't using it at the time. Like this was 2001-ish, around there. I took a painting class with my brother for fun. And I really enjoyed myself. I was a terrible painter. I had never been artistic, never considered myself artistic.
What was your job at the time? Like when you took?
That's a really good question. I was. I worked at a nonprofit organization that served public schools. So previous to that, I was a public school teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I was in my early 30s. And my brother. Lived in San Francisco also at the time. We were both single. Sorry, Wilfredo.
Is that Wilfredo? Stop.
Yeah, he's squeaking his squirrel toy. Come over here.
He can be on the podcast too. I don't want him to feel left out. If he has something to say, if he and his squirrel want to be on, they can totally be on.
Okay, well, give him his 5 minutes at the end.
Yeah.
I can't concentrate when he squeaks his squirrel. So anyway, I took this class with my brother who needed to take an elective. He was getting his... he's now a like full-time like landscape designer, but he was in school for that at the time. And so I took this class with him. We were both single. We took it on a Friday night together for like an entire semester, and we had a blast. And he kind of like did it because he had to. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Like, I was not very good, but I just sort of found this thing. And so I started.
When you were doing it, did you ever think, oh, I wonder if this will ever become my career, or no. hope that it would ever become your career?
That thought never even entered my mind for like 5 years. Wow. So I was just like a regular person out there who I had a good appreciation for art, but I never considered myself artistic. This was totally just a fun thing. In fact, I was kind of embarrassed because I was very, like, I was just like anyone else taking a painting class for the first time. Like, seriously.
Still have any of the work that you did in that class?
Yeah. Do you remember when we did that?
Oh, yeah.
That event in my studio, Danielle, and I showed everyone the first painting I ever
made? Yes, yes, yes.
I don't have all of the paintings from that class, but I do. I painted over, you know, canvases that you buy like at Dick Blick. They're expensive. And so I ended up painting over several of my original paintings because I was just trying to save money on canvases. And I was like, I'm never going to want to hang this up in my house.
Oh my God.
That was before I was even knew that I would ever like want to save my early work.
Of course. You didn't know it was your early work.
That's right. I do have this one still life. Like, we had to bring things in to paint. Anyway, so this condensed version is getting really long. Anyway, I took this class. It was really awesome. So then I was living in this little apartment, and I set up this like painting studio on my kitchen table in this tiny apartment. And I was probably using really terrible, cheap materials. I was painting with acrylics. And I had a great teacher in that class, and he offered classes in his own personal painting studio. He had this big studio and had this sort of collective of people who would come and paint with him. And you paid a certain amount of money. And so I started doing that. And he would teach live, you know, figure painting. And he taught, I took a mixed media class from him. And I was just really experimenting. I had...
How many classes, like, how often were you taking classes, and for how long did you do that?
Oh, only for a couple of years. And I maybe took 3 classes from him. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of, I mean, and it wasn't like one after the other. I would take breaks for a semester or so. Or the equivalent of a semester, because it wasn't out of college. And I really enjoyed him. And then I went on and started painting on my own and doing collage on my own. And I've never told this story, I don't think, at least
Yay!
Not in a podcast. But what's interesting is that, so this teacher, he taught at UC Berkeley and UC Berkeley Extension Program, which is where I originally took a class from him. And he's a pretty well-known artist himself. And years later, I was in a show at the Contemporary Jewish Museum. I mean, this was back in the early 2000s. And then, so that show was in like 2011 or 12, something in there, that I was invited to be in a show at this major museum. And I contributed one piece, and he went to the show and saw my name and found my website and emailed me and was like, oh my God, I had, you know, because
wow.
I basically stopped taking painting classes from him way back when I was still a beginner. And then all this time passed, and I did all of these things. And what's interesting is that he used to talk about the painting curve, which is, where, you know, like you start a painting in the beginning, and it's very kind of like looks really beautiful and clean because you're just, you know, you haven't had an opportunity to mess it up yet, right? Like,
Yeah. You've
maybe even sketched it out, and then you're adding paint and you're being very careful about it. And then at some point, it just starts to look muddy and messy and bad. And then if you can force yourself to sort of go to the top of the painting curve and work past the messiness and then clean it up again and work with it, then that's actually where your work becomes really deep and layered and awesome and beautiful. And at the end of the painting curve, you're back to the beauty, right? So, and I actually talk about the painting curve in my book, Art Inc., and that as an essential component of finding your voice, that you have to like push through the messiness. And, so I told him about that. We had some correspondence. And it was really cool because, like, here was this man who was really influential in the formative years as an artist. Like, I didn't go to art school, so I didn't have professors in that way. So this guy was, like, the closest thing I had to an art mentor besides my studio.
That's so cool. Like, what a cool full circle.
He saw my name in this, like, museum show, like, I don't know, less than
what 10 did he years. Say? Was he so proud of you?
Yeah, he was just kind of shocked. I mean, my name is not, my first name is very common, but my last name is not. And so he figured out that it was me. And
that's so cool.
Yeah.
And so cool. That curve that you're talking about, do you, if you're ever struggling through something, are you conscious of that? Like, do you sort of, does that come to your mind and you think, okay, just push through this?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you know, what materials you're working with depend a lot on, you know, or kind of drive a lot whether you can push through the pain and curve.
Right. Sometimes it's just too messy.
Yeah, or if you're painting on paper.
Yeah.
You can't really paint over things in paper. Sometimes I have to rip things up and start over, or I just have to fix them in Photoshop, which is a whole other thing. You know, like a lot of the work I do ends up being digital. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if I'm like painting an abstract painting, which is like my fine art practice now, and it's not working, I always push through. I do have to tell myself that.
Yeah.
Let me just finish my story. So anyways, I took these classes and then I stopped taking classes and I just started making art all of the time. And I had no aspirations to become a full-time artist. And then I started a blog in 2004 and I started posting my work on Flickr. And my work was very different than it is now. It's very different now than it was 5 years ago. And that's the thing about artists, we're always sort of evolving. But it was mostly different then because I was still a beginner in some ways. I was just like really actively putting my work in the world, even though I didn't really know what I was doing and it wasn't very good yet. It served me well in the end, but I'm so like mortified going back and looking even at stuff from 2008 or 2009. But even early on, like in 2006, 2007, I started having shows because people were emailing me who would see my work and be like, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm an artist. I had no idea. Like I was just doing this for fun. And then I started like making small amounts of money. My work was very cheap at the time. And so I could have an entire show sell out and like barely make $1,000. But so it was clearly not enough to live on. But it's planted the seeds of like, oh, you know, maybe I can do this. And then I started getting a couple of like illustration gigs. Meanwhile, I had a full-time job still for a while. There was a lot of overlap there until I transitioned. In 2007, I left my job, but then for a while I owned a store in a gallery with a friend. So I was self-employed, but I still was supplementing my income with something else. And then in early 2011, I became like full-time.
Were you scared when you made that jump, or were you just ready?
Of course I was scared, but I was also ready.
Yeah.
And honestly, in 2007... it was more scary because the store that I own is called Rare Device. It's in San Francisco, and a woman named Giselle owns it now. The woman I owned it with, Rena Tom, she and I sold it to Giselle. But when we owned it, it was in the middle of the recession. So the store wasn't even making very much money, and I was like barely making a living from my art. But between 2007 and 2011, my art career took off. And so what felt really scary in 2007 felt like a relief in 2011 because I could finally just, you know, make a living as an artist, and things haven't really stopped for me since then.
Well, I actually, in the Being Boss podcast, you were talking about that this morning, and I knew about Rare Device, but it was weird. I'd sort of have forgotten that part of your story, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I wonder, because you are so good at marketing yourself, and a lot of artists are terrible at that, me being one of them. I'm really bad at promoting my own work, and you're really good at it, and in fact, you know, that's what Art Inc., your book, is all about, but do you think that time at Rare Device, like just being immersed in the marketing and seeing, you know, working with lots of artisans and things like that, did that sort of help prepare you to then be able to sell your own work?
Yes, absolutely. I learned so much during that period. Rena Tom, who she owned the original Rare Device, which was in New York, and that's where I actually had a show in 2007 through which we became good friends, and then she ended up leaving New York and coming to San Francisco. I was ready to leave my job, and we were like, okay, let's open a Rare Device in San Francisco together. We ended up closing the one in New York, and the rest is history. But so she had been immersed in this retail world for a few years on her own, and taught me so much about wholesale, retail. She kind of ran this little gallery there. So
yeah, because that was all new to you, right?
Yeah, totally. I had come from a totally different world, and I learned about consignment versus, you know, wholesale and all of these things that would help me. And then we decided to have a gallery component in the store. So an entire section of the store was basically a room that was for the small gallery. So then I became like the gallery director. And so I was booking artists and having artists have shows there. So I got this sort of other side, like gallery experience.
Wow, that's just invaluable.
Yeah, so I have a pretty good broad perspective about both making art and selling art. And
that's why everyone should go and buy Art Inc.
Yeah, well, I mean, the book itself is not all about promoting your work. That's a big part of it. But yeah, part of it is about selling your work, and like, you know, a lot of people wait around for a gallery if they're interested in being a fine artist. They wait around for, you know, for a show, to somebody to ask them to have a solo show. And I was like, screw this, I'm going to organize my own solo show. And eventually I had solo shows in, you know, good galleries. But, you know, when I first starting out, I just didn't wait for people.
I wonder if that is just you, or if that's sort of like a wonderful part of being self-taught and kind of being naive about it. Like, 'cause in art school, it's just like they teach you about galleries, and it seems so scary and intimidating. Your approach to it was just so fresh. And I wonder if that's a combo of who you are and just,
yeah, totally,
kind of not knowing better.
Yeah, it's both things for sure. Like, yeah. I'm definitely, my mother used to say, that I'm not Jewish, but my mother used to say I had chutzpah, which is like, you know, I think Yiddish for like bold.
Yeah.
And I've been like this my whole life. I'm not like a particularly outgoing person, or I'm not like the life of the party. I'm actually rather shy. I test on the, definitely I'm an introvert, but I'm like, even though risking things is scary for me, I still do it. Like, I'm very motivated to succeed at whatever I do. And
when
so
you're very
I,
passionate.
Yeah. And yeah. So part of it was that, but part of it was totally naivete, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't go to art school. I didn't have all of these like harsh voices in my head that you and other friends have told me that they experienced and still experience to this day. I just was like making up my own rules. Well, as it turns out, the rules I was making up for myself, a lot of people, even people who went to art school, are now adopting for themselves. Mm-hmm. But like, I was like, I don't care. I'm just going to do, I mean, I definitely had a certain amount of imposter syndrome where I thought I was an imposter in the art world. And so I definitely had insecurity. This is not to say that I was like, the art world, I'm just going to do my own thing. Like, I was definitely scared and like freaking out half the time, but I did stuff anyway. Like, I kind of knew what the rules were, but I just broke them anyway. And in the end, it served me. And now those rules in general are crumbling, because artists are sort of taking ownership of their own careers in ways that they were never able to do before.
Well, yeah, and the internet has changed everything. Like, yeah, you don't have to sit around and wait for a gallery to show you to be seen.
That's right.
So it's very, very different. I want to talk about all of your books, but I wanted to just quickly ask you, because I've always wondered this, because I've heard, you know, your story about doing that art class with your brother, because he had to do it, and so you were just like, yeah, sure, whatever, Friday nights, I'm single, sure, let's go. What if he had to do a tap dancing class and you had gone to tap dancing class with him instead? Do you think that you'd be a master tap dancer? No. Do you think that you would have found art anyway? Like, were you a creative kid? Like, do you think that just happened to be the way that you got onto that path? Or do you think you would have found it in another way? Or was that just this amazing moment that changed your life?
Well, a little bit of both. It's so hard. I think about this a lot when I reflect on what happened to my life. Like, sometimes my sister, who's probably she's 2 years younger than I am, and she's also, I guess you could identify her as an artist. She's a photographer and a stylist and a maker, and she sometimes she'll be like, not as much now, but in the beginning when I was really prolific and making a lot of art, like she would be like, where did this come from? Like, it was so out of the context of the rest of the previous years of my life. Like, I was just, while I appreciated art and actually was in a relationship for a long time with an artist and a graphic designer and somebody who actually introduced me to art and design and a lot of the things that I think lent themselves to me becoming an artist, I really just didn't consider myself to be a creative person at all. I mean, I definitely made things and sewed, and I loved decorating the house. Like, I definitely had a built-in aesthetic, but in terms of technical skill or drawing skill or the desire to draw, it really just felt like it, in some ways, it came out of nowhere. So I wonder a lot, like, if I hadn't taken that class with my brother, would I be like a superintendent of a school district right now? Because
I wonder that about you too. Like, it's just so crazy.
That's the path I was on. Yeah. Right. I was like working in nonprofit education and public education. I was moving my way up in that world. I was the associate director at a nonprofit. I was like program manager. I was, you know, I have friends who were doing the same job as me, who are, you know, one of them is the superintendent of the Milwaukee School District and went to the Harvard Superintendency Program, and like others who are like leading nonprofit education organizations. And these were my contemporaries, you know, when I was mm-hmm. in my 20s and 30s. And I could have been that person. And I wonder sometimes, like, had I not taken this art class with my brother, what would have happened? But at the same time, it's such a strong part of my identity and what I do now that, like, I feel like I would have found it somehow, even mm-hmm. if it weren't for that one class.
Yeah, I think you would have too.
That class changed my life. It's not like I got home and like never stopped painting again. Like, I definitely took the class, but then I probably didn't pick up a paintbrush again until the next class I took. It's not like I also discovered overnight like talent. Like, I was a horrible artist for a long time. And that's important for people to remember. I mean, I tell this story a lot in my talks and stuff about, like, I took this calligraphy class from Maybelle Imasa, who's like this amazing calligrapher mm-hmm. in San Francisco. And she's so good. Like, she just stands up in front of the class and she likes the most beautiful calligraphy. And when I took this class from her, she brought the binder that she kept at the first calligraphy class she ever took. And it was like, she knows that I say this about her calligraphy and she's not offended. Because we're friends, but it was like bad. It was like, it totally looked like a beginner did it. Like, and I was like, oh man, she worked to get this good. I'm not going to sit down at this calligraphy class and by the end of the month of class, like, be as good as her.
Right.
To practice. And that's what I have to remind people, that, you know, I posted something on Instagram yesterday. It was like this video of drawing flowers really fast. And this one woman was like, do you draw in pencil first and then trace it? And I was like, no, I just draw in pen. And she's like, oh, your lines are so neat and you do it so effortlessly. And I'm like, that's because that's all I've been doing for, you know, 7 years
is yeah.
every day. And when you do something every day and you work at it, you get really good at it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And that's such a simple, lesson. Like, practice makes perfect. Like, we've been told that our whole lives, but people beat themselves up, you know.
You want overnight, like, to be an overnight great artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when you do something that sucks, it's kind of hard to find the motivation the next day to try it again, because the next day it'll probably still suck. It's not going to be amazing when you wake up the next day.
It's going to suck maybe a little less.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but you have to get past that first few weeks, first few months of it not being what you thought it was going to be in your head, and until you can push yourself to get there. And I really admire that so much about you. And I really wanted that to come out in this talk, because I think so many people are hard on themselves and they have to know, do it every day.
Yeah. Or just be patient with yourself and compassionate with yourself. You're not, you know, you're not gonna, you know, I didn't get where I am because I was like judging myself and beating myself up.
Exactly.
I was like, I had a decent perspective that, you know, I was still going to put my work into the world, even though it wasn't perfect. You know, I'm always, in 5 years, I probably will be a much better artist than I am today. It's like you are better in different ways, right? Like mm-hmm. you just keep working at things.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, so now I want, the last thing I really want to talk about, but there's so many things I could ask you about because, you know, we've done this. We did a 2 or 3 hour dinner when I was in San Francisco. I could keep talking forever, but I really want to talk to you about your books because that actually was a huge part of our conversation that we had because I was in San Francisco for the Bedford Gallery show that your beautiful work was in.
Thank you.
And it was so good to talk to you because I'm sort of in the middle of actually writing a book, which is terrifying and exciting and all that jazz. And you had just finished Art Inc. And I kind of wanted to ask you, because you have done several books now, and they're different types. There's some that you've just, that, you know, your hand lettering books where it's all of your quotes, but you didn't do any writing, it's all artwork. And then you did Art Inc., which is not your artwork, it's just all writing. And then your new book, are we allowed to talk about the new book?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both.
That rhymes with, are we allowed to say swimming?
Yeah, okay. It's public.
Okay, so your swimming book is sort of a bit of both. It's writing and it's art. And so I really wanted to know which is your favorite type of book to work on, and do you have plans for more books, and are you loving it, or do you find it stressful? Go.
I find it stressful and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can relate to that. Actually,
yes.
I've been listening to the audiobook of Amy Poehler's Yes, Please. Have you listened to that?
No,
or
not
it?
Yet. I'm waiting till I'm done my book because I'm scared I might try and plagiarize her.
Well, one of the things she talks about is like how, you know, like the whole part of like this running theme in the book is like how it sucked to write a book. But right, but you still get that she like, it was a center point of her life while she was doing it, and that it's hard, but then you do it anyway. And she was obviously having a really good time writing it. And it's this very complex thing, right? Where it's like scary and intimidating, but also awesome.
And so which type is your favorite? Do you like the writing part?
I do. And, I like a little bit, I think I like a little bit of both. So I have, my first book was actually a collection a day, which is photographs of, all of my collections that I took over the course of a year in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I wrote an essay in the beginning, but it was mostly photographs and a few drawings. And then I have several illustrated books. So two books of, hand lettered quotes, one, which comes out in August called Fortune Favors the Brave. And then the one that came out last year called Whatever You Are, Be a Good One. And then, I have, two books with Quarto, drawing books,
mm-hmm.
about drawing flowers, which is like one of the things that I'm known for. And so, I also, have three coloring books, which are of course all drawings, and I'm working on three more right now.
Good.
Adult coloring books are really huge right now. Not for me. Like, it's funny, people always are like, talk about why adult coloring books are so popular, and I'm like, well, to me that's just theoretical because I can't imagine drawing in a coloring book.
Yeah.
I just make the artwork for them. And then I wrote this book about swimming. So it's a written book and an illustrated book about swimming.
That a good combo?
It was really great.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the balance of making the artwork and also writing. I did a lot of interviews of swimmers, and I wrote profiles, and there's essays in the book. And it was like a lot of research. I even hired a research assistant. That was a really great project. I have another book that is not in contract yet, but that I'm working on that will be some writing by me, but then I'm also gonna, it'll be, essays by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like a collection of things, but all the artwork in the book will be mine.
Okay.
So suffice it to say, I love making books enough to keep making them. And, you know, publishing is not the most lucrative thing in the world, so I have to supplement my income with lots and lots of other things. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe eventually someday I can just live off the royalties from my books, but For now, I just work really hard and really long hours on lots of illustration jobs, on my books, on teaching, on, you know, all of the ways that I make an income. So it's just one part of what I do, but I really do love it. And I do love the combination of both writing and illustrating.
Because yeah, you're very good at it. Yeah, you're really good. I was so, I mean, it sounds condescending, but I was so proud of you when Art Inc. came out. Because, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and I was sort of seeing you, you know, write personal posts that were like, oh my God, writing a book is hard. And
well, not only that, but like, I was like, who am I to tell other people how to run an art business? I feel more confident about it now. But like, I was still in the midst of like major imposter syndrome symptoms, you know. This, when I started writing the book, was several years ago. And then I just, my editors kept saying, like, you have a successful art career, you know. Sure, you might need to interview some people who know more than you about certain aspects of the art world, but like, you're the perfect person to write this book. And they just kept saying it over and over and over. And that, you know, I kept wanting to say things in the book like, this might not work. This worked for me, but it might not work for you. Or like, you know, qualifying everything so that I wouldn't sound like an authority. And they were like, actually, you need to sound like an authority. You know, you are an authority, like own your path and own what you did and tell other people how to do it too. And it was a really hard transition for me to make. But once I made that transition, I became much more confident, and people are responding really well to the book. So I must have done something right.
It's really great. I love it, and I'm super proud of you. And it's been a really good inspiration for me on this book that I'm doing, because, you know, I'm not interviewing anymore. It's 10 chapters of me writing. And
yeah, it's so different, isn't it?
Oh my God.
I don't know if I would ever want to do that again. Like,
me either.
I'm like, this one book that I'm working on right now, I'm doing some writing for it, but like, I definitely took myself off the hook for writing the entire book. I'm like, I'm going to invite other people to contribute essays on this particular topic.
Yeah.
I'll illustrate it, because that part's really easy for me. The writing's definitely harder.
Yeah. I've got 6 weeks harder to go. And until my final deadline. And I'm freaking out, but that's okay.
I know how that feels.
Yeah, it'll be done. And I am really proud of myself. And if nothing else, I can say I did it. And I was scared. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be criticism. And then I'll just read the chapter about criticism and take my own advice.
It's true.
I thought of one thing, because you couldn't think of your favorite artist for Speed Round. I thought of another thing to ask you for Speed Round.
Okay.
But I don't know if you'll be able to answer this either.
By the way, I want to say the reason I can't think of my favorite artist isn't because I don't have any.
No, it's because you have too many, probably.
Million of them, yeah.
I know. I get it. You could have said Danielle Carissa. But anyway. Okay. No, I want to know, what is your favorite thing to draw? Is that going to be too many things too?
No, I love drawing. I obviously love drawing flowers. It's like the thing that I do a lot of. But I'm going to eventually have a lot of books of flower drawings. And again, they're not realistic. They're very stylized. I love drawing patterns, sometimes floral patterns. But I draw a lot of geometric or sort of abstract patterns.
Yeah, and is that kind of meditative?
It's just super meditative. Yeah. So I have a sketchbook, and I don't draw in it as often as I would like, because I'm so busy. I like, literally right before we got on the phone, I was finishing work. And so I, most of my sketchbook is filled with these sort of all over patterns. And I love playing with like composition and color and in this really freeform way. And a lot of that stuff has turned into like my latest line of fabric that comes out in October was all based on doodles, basically, or like free form stream of consciousness drawings in my sketchbook, which then we like literally scanned and vectorized and, you know, turned into.
Oh, that's cool. So were they made specifically for that, or did you flip through your sketchbook and find them?
No. My fabric company, Cloud9, she was like, I want to do another line with you. I'm really inspired by your sketchbook. So scan, you know, 8 of your favorite spreads and let me see what I can do with them.
Wow, that's so cool.
I know, isn't that cool? So I'm not saying, I mean, like, they are always, like, fun at night or on the weekend things for me. I'm never drawing things in there that I think are going to turn into anything, but some of them actually have.
Yeah, led that's to really
jobs cool. Or actually turned, you know, I have to manipulate them a little bit because they're, like, on this 7x14 sketchbook spread with a spine down the middle.
Right, right, right. Sometimes
you have to, like, clean them up in Photoshop, but a few of them have actually turned into things, but I never start with that intention. But I love, like, freeform all over pattern drawings.
That's really cool. I should give that a try. Because whenever I look at your things, I always think, oh, it looks so relaxing in a way. Like, I mean, they're so detailed and crazy.
I teach these sketchbook classes on Creative Bug. So I have one called Sketchbook Explorations. And then I'm taping Sketchbook Explorations Part 2 in a couple of weeks, which will come out this fall. And it's all, like, just me sort of, like, guiding people through activities where you can kind of fill a spread with line drawing or, like, watercolor and mixing media in different ways inside your sketchbook. And people find it very meditative and relaxing.
Well, I'll get all that info from you, and then can I put it, I'm going to do a post that goes with our talk, and I'll put it up there, so if people want to look into it, they can.
That would be awesome.
Cool. We talked for so long.
I know.
I mean, really, if there was a glass of rosé and a plate of fries, this could go a lot longer.
It's true. It's funny. People will be like, you know, oh, I want to have you on my podcast. It's going to be 30 minutes. I won't take too much of your time. But I'm so chatty and, like, I love talking to people that, like, eventually they'll be like, oh, crap, that was supposed to be 30 minutes. We're already at an hour. And so they either have to totally edit the crap out of it or they just end up posting the whole thing.
I think we're just going to post the whole thing. It was so good because I had my little questions because I knew I'd get all, like, distracted and whatever. So I got to ask you all the things that I wanted to ask you.
Oh, good.
I know, not bad. And I think that was great because I really wanted to, you know, bug you for stuff that I, you know, didn't know already.
I know. Well, there's a lot that a lot of people don't know.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean,
I'll have to get you a lot of rosé to get those stories.
Yeah, we could do a whole, like, Lisa Congdon dark side episode.
I'll just that do it. I'll just bug you over dinner. You won't even know. I'll be like, record. Well, thank you so much. I know we're both boiling hot. We're having a heat wave in both of our cities. So thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I can't wait to see you again whenever that might be.
I know. Well, we live closer now, so.
Yes, that's true.
We have to make it happen.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much. And this was awesome.
Thanks for having me, Danielle.
You're welcome. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Bye. Fries and rosé. That really is the trick to getting an artist to tell you everything. Thanks so much to Lisa, Saatchi Art, and of course to you for listening. The next episode will be ready for your ears next Saturday. See you then!